Okay. Steps 4 through 9 kind of clump together. They're sometimes clumped together, and that's what I'm going to do today. And when I introduce myself as a sponsor in meetings, I usually say that I sponsor steps 1 through 12, but especially steps 4 and 5, because I observe over the years people do steps 1, 2, and 3, and then that step 4 is like the great American novel that never really gets written and given away. That's just my observation. If we took statistics, which we don't in OA, it would be interesting to see how many people have completed a 4-step. So actually, today you'll have a little chance to complete a 4-step. So let's see. Let's have somebody read what step 4 is. So the searching and fearless moral inventory. Here's the surprising thing when you come into OA, right? You think that, oh, I have to clean out my kitchen cupboards, which is also not a bad idea. I need to start walking around Green Lake, you know, okay. But that's not what, there's nothing in the steps that say to do that, right? It says make a searching and fearless moral inventory. And I've been in so many meetings where like, have I been searching enough? Am I been fearless enough? And this is part of our disease, like how much is enough? It's just overall, always part of this disease. I worked the HOW program for about 5 years, and I've worked traditional OA the rest of the time. And when people ask me the difference, I just say, when you're wondering what HOW is, you just say, it's about how much, right? Because this is one of our problems, and we never know how much. And I feel in the 4-step, we never know how much. So the 4-step, there's a lot of different ways to do the 4-step. In this book, I brought all the literature. This is the OA 12 and 12. There's a lot of questions in here, like 4 pages, I think it is, of questions. And you could grab a sponsor and just begin to write on these questions. And this will bring you into thinking about things you haven't thought about before. This is one of the values of doing the searching and fearless moral inventory. Like, instead of running those same 2 to 5 thoughts that I run all the time, like, oh, my problem is this, or her problem is that, society's problem is the other. These questions are like, I've never thought about this. Have I repeatedly belittled anyone? Well, I don't think about that, but let me think about that. Let's see, here we go. Are we obsessed with money? Have we ever abused animals? I mean, this thing goes, things are not things I normally think of. And then you go, why does this matter? It helps us understand ourselves better. Have we indulged in self-pity? Have we played the martyr? Okay, I can relate to that one. All right, so...
Do you prefer that to the big book way?
Okay, so here's 5 ways I've done 4 steps. That's one of them. Actually, I found this morning. Wow. I found this 4-step inventory from 1989. This is an obsessive person who keeps this, I think. My handwriting is so legible. Here's my character defects in my, like, Catholic girl handwriting. Pride. Don't let people know what's really going on with me. Behave different ways in front of people and then when I'm alone, especially with respect to eating. Sloth. Procrastinating a certain percentage of the time just to prove I'm not compulsive. That's hilarious. Don't quite clean things as well as I should, saying I'll do more later. Now that's not really true anymore. Anyway, so there's another way to do a 4-step, those character defects. Here is an inventory list I got from my sponsor. A should list, a fear list, a resentment list, everything I ever stole list, my character defects, a regret list, a guilt list. How do I want to be? Characteristics I admire, people I have hurt, history of binge buddies, history of enablers, food history. It's very helpful to have a sponsor who kind of keep you going. In the HOW program, there's the famous 179 questions that you can answer. In the big book, which she was just asked about, there are some questions listed about resentment, fear, and sex inventory. And some people have put them into forms. I brought these. You can look at these if you want. Like, you can list out in a certain way that Bill W. suggested. And my feeling about why he did it that way is just keep going on it. Just keep writing it. See what you find out. What I find out from everything I write is I'm full of fear and I'm full of self-will. It's taken me a lot of writing, and if I'm never not sure, if I keep writing more, I'm about fear and I'm about self-will. But you know what? You never you never can believe it about yourself unless you discover it about yourself. And that, to me, is what the value of that fourth step is. So that's my answer. I am currently using this pretty blue book. This is a wonderful book that my friend gave me. This is an inventory about ambition. Because I started this in October, I realized that I'm very ambitious. And it's weird because my ambition is not like, you know, like to cure cancer or to create a better Apple computer. My ambition is to cram more things into the half hour before I have to leave for work. And my ambition is to like make this the most awesome 2-hour experience anybody in the room's ever had. And my ambition, you know, so these ambitions cause me to overwhelm myself and cause me to do bad self-care and cause me to resent myself and others, right? So anyway, the fourth step is a way to get to know yourself. And a lot of us do therapy, and therapy is a lot of the same thing, getting to know yourself. I'm for therapy, I'm not against therapy, so just start writing. That's a fourth step for you. One of the things that's been really helpful to me that somebody else suggested was to write one page on every decade of my life. That's helpful because there's a beginning and an end to that page. And it kind of helps me sort of move through and sort of see a pattern and begin to have a little bit of sympathy and empathy towards myself. Like, you know, when I was a freshman in college, I came from a smallish town in Montana to the University of Washington, one of the largest universities in the country. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no friend, I had no sponsorship, there was no orientation, or I didn't go to it. I had no buddies, I mean, nothing. And as I never even realized that until maybe a year ago when I was looking back over my decade. That's a lot to go through when you're just turned 18. So I have a little bit of empathy for myself. I mean, how I handled it was perfectly understandable. I got dimes. Dimes seemed to be my thing. I got dimes from the front hall, and instead of spending it on laundry, I spent it at the vending machine. So, I mean, I knew how to cope. But it wasn't the diseased way. So that's my bit on step four. There's not that much to say about it. You just have to do it. And when our next break, I'll give you a chance to do some writing. Step five is to talk to somebody about it. Yes?
Are you going to read the kid version of step
five? Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I forgot. Would you like to?
Sure. We wrote down everything we ever did that bothered us.
Yeah, isn't that great? You know what I love about that?
We wrote down everything we ever did that bothered us.
You know what I love about that is it doesn't say everything that we did wrong. It could be something that bothered us because of what somebody else did. It could be what we did. I mean, that's why I love that kid version. I'm commenting, which I shouldn't be doing. Step five, would someone like to read step five?
Admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our lives.
That is a tough one, isn't it? The kid version is a little bit, makes it easier. Someone want to read the kid version?
We read our lips to God, higher power, then to a person who cares about us.
Isn't that interesting? This is the origins of AA, the idea of sharing, or we'll say confessing, admitting what we did wrong to other people. You know, for a person whose life and disease is about secret, solo, and sweet, sharing that with somebody else is a big antidote to the secrecy. To the secrecy of these defects. So I believe personally that is a very important part of it. And how I've done it and how other people have done it with me when I've sponsored is sometimes have read the entire thing, no matter what I wrote, I read it. When I did the how, 179 questions, it was one question written, one question read. One question written, one question read. That's one way to do it. Four, you can ask for feedback and reaction, or you could ask just for listening. You could choose somebody that you'll never see again, or you could choose your somebody, sponsor, whatever. But just being in the presence of another human is really a helpful way to realize that everybody has stuff that bothers us. And if it's nagging at us, that's more pressure. What's our best way of relieving pressure? Eating. Six and seven can be super fastly done. I think in the big book, it's like go home and think about them and you're done. They're like one paragraph each. So maybe not that big a deal, but then they could really be life-changing. So would someone like to read step six?
We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character.
Thank you. And the kid version?
We felt ready for God to take away the sad or upsetting things we do.
My best understanding of step six came one time when I was going to Al-Anon. I was riding my bike to Al-Anon meetings, and I was putting on rain gear, even though, I didn't want it to rain because I was riding my bike. And I realized, but I was ready for the rain. I just became ready to be ready for the rain. I didn't like the rain. I didn't want the rain. But I was ready for the rain. And it just helped me with this concept that there's an entire step about being ready. It doesn't mean I have to like it. And sometimes that's how it is. I'm packing my lunch because I want to be ready for this day. I'd rather be, taking a longer bath this morning, but I'm going to do what I need to do to be ready. And I feel like just the being, getting ready is a really important sort of theme in that step, even though the step itself is about, our defects of character. So we could talk about defects of character too. One thing that's helping me, I think when I changed my one religion, I went into another religion that was very much emphasis on positive thinking and never say anything that you don't want and all that stuff. And during that period, I developed migraine headaches. Now, I was eating a ton of sugar during that period. And in fact, I was talking with my sponsor and trying to remember, like, when did I leave OA? What happened? I just don't remember. Well, Mary, you were eating tons of sugar. I'm like, it robbed me so far of remembering what I experienced for about 12 years of my life. I stopped eating sugar in 1983 when my friend went into AA, and I noticed that people in AA seemed happy in a spiritual sort of way. And I said, how come they have that happiness? They're not drinking. So what should I do? What could I do? I remember sitting at the dining room table the night we put my partner into treatment. And I had literally a mound of cookies that I had bought at the deli. And I'd bought a mound because, if I just bought three or four, he would know I was eating them. So I had to buy enough for a party. So I had the party platter of cookies in front of me, which would mean I have to eat it because I don't know how to stop eating it once I start. Maybe I could stop eating sugar. Maybe that's kind of like my alcohol. And I didn't eat sugar for 13 years. It made me realize I was onto something. It wasn't hard to stop. I mean, there's 3 days that it's hard, I have to be honest with you. But after those 3 days, it's not hard. It's so much easier. Right now at Christmas time, let's see. I'm looking to see if any of you were in the meeting. I was in a meeting this week, and one person said how he's struggling with going into stores because there's all this sugar everywhere. And I started thinking, I am not struggling with that. Thank you, higher power. I don't eat that. Just part of the decorations for me. That is fantastic. There's whole grocery stores worth of things that I don't even have to think about. If I had to pick and choose and be moderate about sugar, I would be spending all my time picking and choosing, being moderate about sugar. So, done. It's been so freeing. Now, I have to eat something else, right? Or else I'll just feel, neglected. But it doesn't have to be sugar. That's huge. Okay. I'm supposed to be talking about defects of character, but I kind of got off on something else. But that's one of the defects. Trying to ambitiously get everything in. Okay. Should we move on to step seven? Who would like to read step seven?
Step seven. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings.
And the kid version?
We honestly ask our higher power to take away the sad or upsetting things we do.
And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's one paragraph about step seven, and it has a prayer in it. Some of you, most of you may be familiar with this prayer, but I would just like to read this prayer. This is on page 76 of this edition. I think this is current edition. Seven-step prayer. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. I just find that of all the ways they could have said this prayer, I find it fascinating that it says, you know, remove things that stand in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Well, what I've started changing these prayers around just in the last couple weeks, this is how dynamic this program is. Even I would change this one. See, I like to rewrite the big book. It's because of this. I pray that you remove from me every single defect of character. Like, you haven't done it yet. Right? Like, I'm telling higher power, like, get on the ball. I would say the prayer like this. I pray that you help me realize how you have removed the things that have needed to be removed to date. Like, you're doing your job and help me understand that you are. That has become my prayer. Help me to see how you're helping me. Help me to see where the way out is. That has helped my sense of faith to realize that if I just open my eyes, amazing what I will see. So that's what step seven is for me. It's, you know, we in step three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to some kind of care. And here we're saying, and, you know, even this stuff. So, okay. Step eight. More action. We got a pattern going.
Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all.
Anybody want to read the kid version? Would someone please read the kid version?
We wrote down the names of people we had hurt and felt ready to say we were sorry.
Yeah. I have found it so helpful to make a difference between step eight and step nine. What you write down in step eight is a thing. What you decide to do about it in step nine is a different thing. So write them all down. And I realized that my sponsor at the time, I remembered it. Which is interesting to me. In 1989, I wasn't eating sugar. I remembered this. One of the things that she, of course, I remembered it more than I can find it. Oh, here. This is excellent. Here it is. Made a list of all persons we had harmed. People for whom I feel I must pray. Action amends. Like my brother. I read your diary. I remember now. I didn't remember that. I read my brother's diary. So what's the action amends? So people talk about this. Like, do I go to my brother and say, I read your diary and I'm sorry? Yes. But do I also, like, don't gossip about people's private things? That's the action of that. And there's one person, and I hear she still is, that I have not found, but in the age of Facebook, I probably could find her if I tried, that I still need to make amends to. But what my sponsor really helped me to do, I know I saw it this morning, and it doesn't matter if I don't see, my eyes don't see it right now. Here's a way to think about who should be on that list. Who would you cringe to see walk into the room? There's something there to be worked with. And I knew exactly who that was. There were two people on that list. One was a former partner and one was somebody else. And it was like, yeah, okay, I have unfinished business with those two people. Yep, because it would be just like, in fact, this happened. Oh my gosh, this so happened to me. Okay, that partner, at the time we were together for 6 years, she went into alcohol treatment, came out, we became, you know, we're friends or not friends or whatever. And then we were at the same church, and week after week, she ended up sitting next to me, and it was one of these churches where, turn to the person next to you and see the light of life in them. And it was always her. And that was so great on higher power's part. Just to make that happen over and over again, it cracked me up. So anyway, but the point of this is, I guess I kind of slipped more into how to do the amends, but like, who goes on this list? I think this is a really excellent time to use a sponsor's help. Like, let's discuss this list. And then as we are going to get ready to do amends, let's review the list. You know, I've heard so many people say they made amends to their parents. I have not made amends to my parents. I feel that they were the parents. But on the other hand, on the advice of sponsor at the time, in their dying year, and I was fortunate enough to, you know, that took some time, not too much time for their sake, but like it was not unexpected. I was able to, I did a ton of forgiveness work, and I felt like that was what I needed to do with my parents. But it doesn't matter. I mean, everybody will make their own decision about that. And the point is that you make this list so you can realize, like, what you're carrying around. And you don't have to carry stuff around. This week, we carry weight around. We carry waiting around. We carry resentments around. We don't have to do that. Step 9. I'm just going to go right to you.
May direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others.
Yeah, I think I've already been talking about that. But let's just hear the kid version.
We told these people that we were sorry, unless it would hurt them or others. We tried to make up for what we had done.
Yeah.
I have a question about that. I've always had a question about that.
Okay, well, let's see what it is.
I don't think it's saying that we then have to be friends with them.
I don't think it says that either.
And I used to think that. So I thought that all these people on my list, I would have to go say I was sorry about something. And then I'd have to make kumbaya.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that
but
stopped you from doing
do
it.
Just go say I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The problem is that then I still think they're a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
But all I have to do is say I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. I'm going to ask for an opportunity for people to write on step 4, but I also think it will be, and then we'll have a little more sharing, but I think it'll be really interesting if anybody has a 9th step amends to share. That would be really interesting and inspiring, but we'll see. See, I'm ambitious. I'm ambitious. I want us to do it all. Wow. All right, let's do a little mini writing on a mini step 4. So we brought paper, we brought small pieces of paper. Here's the step 4, searching and fearless moral inventory. But you know what? Just write. Pick a decade. Write a little bit about it to try and understand the things that were bothering you. What's the kid version say? We wrote about things that bothered us. So just pick a decade and just do a little bit of writing. So here's an opportunity if you'd like to share from what you wrote or just the process of writing or steps 4 through 9. There's like a range of topics available here. But let's just take maybe 5 to 10 minutes for sharing. Hi, Chris. Thank you.
I had a bunch of people on this list, which is funny because I feel like I did a pretty thorough inventory about a year ago. And it's funny how like new people show up. Like from what? But that kid thing really helped. It was like, okay, anyway, so now I feel like, oh God, I gotta do this. I mean, I know I don't have to do it today, but it's a good list.
Great. Thank you for sharing.
I'm Rachel, I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Rachel.
Took a searching and feels moral inventory of myself. When you said pick a decade, I was like, I don't get it. Oh. I just didn't seem to understand at first. And then I chose my 20s and I wrote like half the page. And I keep getting stuck on took a searching and moral inventory of myself. What was I doing in my 20s? What was my part in it? I wrote, I was feeling overwhelmed, out of control, abandoned, and angry. In my 20s, I stole food from my work and my son. I stole money from my husband and my parents. I lied about everything to everyone. That was a big one. I was cruel. I was resentful. I was vengeful. I was ill-equipped to be a mother and a wife. I was self-centered and unable to see how my actions were affecting others. I've done a fourth step. I'm feeling really emotionally connected to this part. Like, I kept my husband from friends. I put us in tremendous debt. Like, I was not a good friend. I was not. Yeah. As I'm sitting here thinking now, it's two parts. It's this, you know, forgiveness of myself, and I was ill-equipped. I wasn't ready. And I pushed myself into something to try to prove something, you know, because, and it goes back to, and I'll be quick, but to when we were writing before, I just wasn't ready. I don't know what I was going to say about that. Oh, my eating, I didn't know my eating was out of control. Like, I spent almost all my life not knowing it was about food. I was so out of control with food, I don't even think I thought about whether or not other people ate like me. I don't care. I'm eating that way. And that's what, you know, like, I just didn't think about that. And then when I was, like, 27, I was in the bathroom, in the dark, in a house all by myself, compulsively eating Valentine's candy and hiding it in the bottom of the trash can, and it occurred to me, like, people don't do that, I don't think. So, yeah. Sorry. Back to the fourth step, like, it's about forgiving myself, but it's also about taking responsibility for it. And I was thinking when you were sharing, it's, you're right, I too think about my parents, like, that was their job, but it's the living amends I make. It's how I act now towards my husband, what kind of friend I am now, and what kind of daughter I am. That's my part. That's it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Rachel.
My name's Gail.
When I did a ninth step, one of the people on my ninth step was this girl from school. She was my best friend until the day her dad died. And when her dad died, he died in a very public way, and she was suddenly, like, this big deal family in town, and I was not the kind of friend she wanted to have at that time. I wasn't able to be supportive, and so we were no longer friends after that. And I was bitter towards her for abandoning me as a friend. And so as an adult, I could see that, oh my gosh, this poor girl, she lost her dad, and I'm complaining because I'm not the center of attention in this moment, you know, and I'm offering her nothing, you know, so of course, but then I'm blaming her for not wanting to be my friend. So here she is on my amends list. It's been 20 years. She bolted after school. I had never seen her since or heard from her. She didn't show up at the reunions, on and on. Magically, she shows up on my Facebook suggestions of people you might know. And her profile picture is the headstone of somebody who had recently, very recently passed away. So I go and I'm looking on the page, and it turns out that her partner, not only does she live less than a mile from me, but which is not nowhere near the town where we grew up, but her partner has just passed away of acute alcoholism. And I had just been involved with an alcoholic. I knew a lot about that. And I was just shocked and surprised. And I contacted her, not to talk about that, but just to, you know, be her friend. And on Facebook, and maybe reconnect with her. Well, the amazing thing that happened is that the very first time we got together, we sat down in this restaurant, and she told me, as the first person she told, the whole story of how her husband, who was effectively her husband, had passed away in a very shocking way from acute alcoholism that she was not very aware of. And sitting there listening to her tell me this whole story from beginning to end, I felt this sense of being able to be there for her in almost the identical way that I needed to be there for her when I was 13. And she didn't have a clue what I was talking about. She's like, I don't know what happened. What happened back then? She didn't know. It wasn't about her. But God had a hand in that. And then the next thing that happened in our friendship was her cat was dying. And she called me, of all people, and asked me to come over. And I come over, and her cat is dying. And I took her to the vet, and I hold her hand as they put her cat to sleep. And it was about the most obvious ninth step that I could ever imagine. And it helped me with all my other ninth step, because I could see that God's just waiting for me to be ready. It doesn't matter what the other person perceives. I can still make a very clear amends to them.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing. Anybody else?
I'm Michelle. I'm a small reader.
Hi, Michelle.
So I'm not going to read what I wrote. I wrote all my teenage years. It was pretty crazy. But you said something about the ninth step. And I'm amazed at the power of these steps. I had a big resentment against my mom. She's shown up on every four step I've done, and I've done several. And big resentment. There was something she did that I was ready to disown her from the family. And the only reason I kept having a relationship with her is my daughter, my grown daughter. It was like, you can't disown her and break up the family, blah, blah, blah. So, okay, I kept this relationship with her, and I was very angry. And then, so this was about 6 years ago, this event happened. And then about 5 years ago, I got really into working the steps. And I was working the steps, and you know, I put my mom down, I put this event down. I shared it in my fifth step. And it says in the fifth step in the big book that these are about to be cast out. It doesn't say we work on our resentments. It doesn't say we have to get over them ourselves. It says they're about to be cast out. Mm. And so, you know, I did step 6 and 7, and then I got to 8, and my mom was on my list, and then I met with her, and I made amends, you know, for the things I had done and stuff like that, and I had a pretty good feeling toward her. We've been having a good relationship for about a year at that time and stuff. And then all of a sudden, she brings this thing up, and she says, oh my gosh, that, and that was so unforgivable, and I'm so sorry, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just going, whoa. I had completely forgotten about it because it had been cast out. And you know, sometimes when people remind you of stuff you were once angry about, you start getting all angry again. I didn't start getting all angry again. I was just tripping on the power of my higher power to do things. It's amazing to me. And as I tell you this, I'm not angry about the situation. I still think, you know, I mean, what she did was wrong, but I'm not angry about it. I don't hold it against her anymore. And I can't do that myself. I can't look at a situation and go, oh, well, she's just human, and she didn't mean to do it, and I should forgive her to hold the family together. I'm not capable of that. But God performed a miracle. So it's pretty awesome. And it's a result of writing about it, telling somebody, 6 and 7, 8 and 9. I mean, God did something amazing in that.
Nice.
So,
thank you. Nice. Thank you, Michelle. Okay, anybody else? Okay. All right then, you can really, I feel, thank you so much for sharing the power of these steps. All right. 10, 11, and 12, right? Okay, so step 10. First we read. My buddy here.
sorry, 10?
10.
Continue to take personal inventory when we were wrong. Promptly admitted it.
Thank you. And what's the kid version?
Every day we thought about how we acted and how we could improve.
Nice. Okay, so I told you my kid version of a 10-step inventory would be to write down logging my sins every night. I don't do it that way anymore. I do have a moment of reflection at night, and I've done lots of different kinds of ways of doing that. I thought it might be interesting to just, you know, let people share out if you have a way of doing a 10-step. I don't know if anybody brought with them. Region 1 has a journal. I don't have one right now. Anyway, you can buy this at GSI. It's a journal, and it says, like, there's a lot of things you can do with that journal, but it says, like, what were the things I was planning to do today, my action plan, What did I eat today? What are the amends I made today or need to make? Let's see, what else does it say? What am I grateful for? So it's like each day, like one of the things they say in AA is to live in an airtight day, something like that. A day tight compartment. Like the one day at a time. This step is really about the one day at a time. So if I keep each, it's like my kitchen when I wash the dishes each day. It doesn't get to be a giant mess. It's kind of like that. It's like internally, if I just sort of keep up with myself. So anyway, that's what I'm currently doing right now is a mental inventory. Another thing I've done a lot is to write best and worst list. I love this this one. It's writing down the 5 best things that happened and the 5 worst things that happened. I love that one because it broke me out of my positive thinking thing at the time, and I began to notice those worst lists. That's how I started to notice resentments. I noticed on the worst thing that happened is a period of time I would always fall asleep in work meetings. And I was like, okay, how many more times am I going to write that down before I'm actually going to go to sleep earlier? So anyway, it just was helpful. Sometimes people do this AEIOU stuff, like what was my abstinence, what was my exercise, what did I do for myself, what did I do for others, what is my understanding of higher power. So there's different ways. And it's kind of neat to use a structured way because, it's not the way you usually think. So I just want to throw it open if other people have used or are using a way of doing a daily inventory.
What was all of that?
Well, let's see. I rattled it off pretty fast.
I have it, yeah. That's what I use. A is, was I abstinent? E is, what kind of exercise? I, what did I do for myself? O, how did I interact with others? U, did I uncover any feelings? Why is Yahoo something I feel good about every day?
Nice.
And then I add 3. G is 3 things I'm grateful for. T, what tools did I use? And M, did I use prayer and meditation?
Thank you. The second part of the step, so we take this inventory daily, is to make it, let's see. When we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So that's the other part of keeping our side of things clean. And that way, maybe in 10 years, we won't have all this stuff we have to write and clean up and make amends about, right? It's just living more in the present moment of the day. Anybody else have anything on step 10 that they use or would like to share?
Person, I am on the road to relapse when I have forgotten to be grateful.
Mm.
And that has to be the top of my list.
Mm.
I know people incorporate it in different places, but I have found that I need to keep my gratitude fresh. And I challenge myself to name 10 things I'm grateful for and make them different. Mm-hmm. Can't be all conceived.
Right.
I made it through the day. But that gratitude piece is really key for me.
That's sweet. Thank you so much. All right. Let's move on to step 11. Would someone like to read step 11? Actually, like to read step 11? Give you a break.
Prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out.
Thank you. So I went to a workshop once. The famous Joe and Charlie were 2 AA guys that wrote an extensive description of the Big Book. And if you haven't had a chance to do a Big Book study, a Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I really recommend it. It's really great for food people. And there's actually a Big Book study coming up. There's a flyer back there. But anyway, they talk about the squiggly writing. When there's squiggly writing, meaning italics, it really means something. So there's only one phrase that has squiggly writing in the 12 steps, and it's as we understood him. Like just a reminder that, bye Casey, thanks for coming. Just a reminder that this is like, don't get hung up on the God thing. It's like, however you understand God, that's what we're talking about here. So I just want to point that out, especially for people who are new in OA and don't want anybody to run away because of the God stuff. I have a whole big book in which I wrote out he and put in she for all the God stuff. That was what I had to do in the late 80s, and that was fine, whatever you have to do. So sought through prayer and meditation. I have three things to share about that are pretty quick. One is a gift from my mother was a little cross-stitch thing that she had in her kitchen. A day hemmed in prayer cannot unravel too much. And I just love that saying. If I pray in the morning and I pray at night, I'll be okay. And I hear people in meetings talk about like, oh, I was so tempted by food and I forgot to pray. It's like, that's pretty much the definition of being in the addiction. That is when we don't remember to pray. And I don't remember to pray at times like that. Although sometimes I do, but rarely. Maybe 5% of the time now I pray under those circumstances. So I like to do like, what do we call that? Preparatory praying, right? Like to clear the path of the day, to know, to remember, oh, I prayed, I can remember that. At the end of the day, no matter what happened, I'm going to pray again. So I've really, that's one of the great gifts I have from my mother, is that saying. A day hemmed in prayer cannot unravel too badly. The other thing is I heard a great four-word prayer, which I'll have to modify because I'm being recorded, but it says, Dear God, F you. And that sometimes has been a fantastic prayer to pray, because sometimes that's exactly how I feel. And it's an honest expression of feeling. And I just, that honest expression of feeling is what gets us to move on to whatever's the next thing. So I offer that prayer as well, and you can use whatever word you want. And then my very favorite, my personal favorite phrase in the whole of this 12 and 12 book is in step 11, and I don't know if I can put my eyes on it, but it doesn't matter. Bottom of page 96. When we're in meditation, and it even deserves musical accompaniment, when we're in meditation, we are connecting with our true unfragmented self. And that, there is something about that phrase, my true unfragmented self, that just makes me go, oh. It may be because of my ambition and my mind battling between my mind and my body, or I'm trying to choose, or I'm trying to please all these kinds of people, or I'm overly scheduled. I got, you know, all of that stuff is about fragments, and the fragments battling for attention. It's like, okay, it's the whole unfragmented self that I'm getting in touch with in this step. And I just really appreciate that statement. December 13th has a wonderful prayer. That's today. A wonderful thing about step 11. So I'm wondering if anyone would like to read. Oh, Edward, thank you.
I'm not going to sing.
No singing.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. John Newton. Nothing could better describe what so many of us in OA feel than the words of amazing grace. For us, however, the experience is not a religious, but a spiritual one. Whatever our religious beliefs or non-beliefs, spiritual recovery is felt as a profound interchange, a dissolving of the attitudes and opinions that kept us chained to compulsion. Spiritual awakening heals us of self-built blindness to the truth about ourselves and our condition. We are no longer wandering, alone and lost. We are found. For today, that people so deep in the clutches of compulsive illness can recover is truly evidence of amazing grace.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I wondered if anybody had any particular favorite prayer or prayer, meditation, action, whatever, that you'd like to share. I thought when I first wrote the agenda, we'll just go in the circle, but it seems a little controlling, so anyone would like to volunteer that?
My new sponsor has had me reading pages 86 through 88 of the Big Book every morning. Actually, I forgot this morning. I'll have to do that after we leave. Starting with On Awakening, and the kid version of step 11 here, we asked God what to do and for help to do it. that's basically those two pages in one sentence. And it's, I can feel it changing me, even when I don't believe it, even when I don't really care about what I'm reading. As long as I do it, it improves my day.
Thank you. Michelle?
Michelle Pimples over here. So, when I was introduced to the steps out of the big book, I mean, I've been around them for years, but really working them in San Diego, they were suggested reading 84 to 88 every day, and that's the directions to step 10 and step 11. And I read it a few times a week and then mix it up with other literature. And the paragraph in the middle of page 87 says, we usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. And I love the kid version in this thing we just read, because how I've paraphrased this is, God, please give me the power to do what I should do today. Because there's so many things, you know, I can make this to-do list of all the stuff I want to get done or that I think I should get done, but what is it God wants me to get done? And then give me the power to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And some things that I wouldn't have planned or I wouldn't have thought I could do, the power is there, and that tells me it was probably God's will. Because the power came through to do it. And then I like on toward the bottom of page 86, right after the On Awakening thing that Edward was talking about, it says, we consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Well, if my thinking's divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives, tell me there's not much left. So that it's probably what's left is of my higher power, because when Michelle's in charge, it's like this little, what are those things, like little pets in a cage, spin up those wheel things. It's just all that stuff going around. So that's a really good prayer for me, and then the one I shared first. So that's, I love this part of the book.
That's wonderful. Thanks. Yeah.
I'd like to share. I realize that I wake up really cranky with a really poor attitude, and I asked my higher power one day, what can I do when I actually got an answer? And it was to sing in a prayer in my shower. So I've been doing singing prayer showers, and I often sing the Serenity Prayer, and often sing some of the steps, whichever ones I really need at the time. And also sing affirming, you know, God is, I am. Sing things that are positive. And it's made such a difference in my day. When I don't do it or I have a shower late in the day, I really feel the difference.
I love it. Thank you for that. That's great. Hey, Chris. Yeah, thanks, Chris. All right, we have a few minutes left, so we're going to end with step 12, which is cleverly written as only the beginning. Would someone like to read step 12?
Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, this message to other alcoholics who go through their ears and practice these principles in all our affairs.
All right, thank you. And the kid version.
Because it had helped us, we told people about OA and the 12 steps when they asked. We kept using the steps every day.
Yeah, Nice. Practicing the principles in all our affairs. Helping others when they asked. I like that kid version. Like, when they asked, that's attraction, not promotion. And then having had a spiritual awakening, you know, as the result of these steps. That's pretty amazing to think of a spiritual awakening. I feel that one of the things, I'm very sure they say this in the Big Book, a spiritual experience and a spiritual awakening, it can be like a flash of light, or it could be a gradual awakening. When did the sun rise? Wow, but it's risen. So it's not a debate about which is better or worse or whatever, but like, if you work a spiritual program, you will awaken spiritually. I just think that's pretty much true. And I think there's a lot of evidence. In my life, I feel that lately, because I've been working my program in a more serious way in the last 4 weeks, because of this event, literally, this feeling that the higher power is already doing and done its job has just been an awakening for me. And I feel so, so grateful for that. And we try to help others when they ask. So we're going to end with an insurance policy about that. So this is a handout also available from OA World Service. And the idea here is, in the grapevine I read this, I have yet to master the art of self-sponsoring. And that was really good for me because I'm like, I'm doing fine. I'll give myself an assignment. I'll do it. That's not the point. The point is that we help others. And helping others helps us, and others help us get out of our addicted head. So that's what this insurance policy is. So I'm going to make a suggestion here that you find somebody in this room and share this information. Like, I am asking this person or giving them permission to contact me if I don't get back to them. Wow. And or if they don't meet at a certain meeting. I mean, you'll have to work out some of those details. And also contacting a friend. I mean, this is like serious stuff. Like when people disappear, the whole idea around the 12th step is like, people disappear, it's not usually for a good reason. People don't usually come back saner, happier, and thinner. They come back unhappy, more overweight in most cases, crazier. So we can help each other by just keeping in touch. And in case you're worried about, you know, like meddling, this person's asking you to keep in touch with them. And then contact information. So that's what this is. So I'm just going to know that it's going to work out. And I'm going to give people a chance now. I mean, we're just going to talk to each other. If you want to buddy up with somebody, please do it. And I don't have scissors, but I brought a paper cutter so you can cut the form apart. So that's what we're going to do here for a couple of minutes, and then we'll have our closing. So, all right, well, let's reconvene so that we can unconvene. We are a little past 12:30, but I still think we have time for a closing circle. And we'll do that in a second and say the Serenity Prayer together. Before we do that, I just want to open the floor. I want to say thank you so much for coming today and sharing and participating and sharing your program with me. I feel very blessed by the whole thing and by you. Is there anybody who wants to share? Is there anything you need to share sort of for completion and feeling good about being here? We have a few minutes for that right now.
I would like to share. My name is Dot, and I'm a compulsive eater and bulimic. I had such a wonderful experience Thanksgiving. I fasted Thanksgiving. That is not abstinent eating. But I was on Wednesday delivering something for my daughter, her participation to the Thanksgiving meal at my mother's. I have a sister who hates me, and I'm stoic with her because of these steps and tools. But she drove up while I was on the porch putting the tray of food and things. I didn't even rap at the door because I knew I wouldn't be received. My mother's 105. And I fell in love with her 8 years ago. She wasn't important in my life before then. But the thing is, God gave me my mother to love on Thanksgiving, the day before. So if you ask me how was my Thanksgiving, I spent it with my mother. And God bless this program. I didn't have to eat over it. I didn't have to emote over it. And I just said TTFN to my sister and loved my mother. I was over the moon with joy and so glad that I could accept the feelings and vibes I get from my sister and my darling mother, blind as a bat and can't hear. She says, "Who are you?" And in my truck driver voice, I said, "Dorothy." She says, "Who?" And I just kissed her on her head, on her cheeks, on her chin, and left with a full heart and so grateful for OA and my canned food I had in my bag that was really measured, whatnot. But by golly, without this program, I'd be in my disease and throwing up over it. So I'm grateful today to be in OA. Thank you.
Thanks, Todd. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you so much for being here today. We always say, in the understanding of anonymity, who you saw here and what you hear here, let it stay here when you leave here. And with those who care to, please join me in the Serenity Prayer. Have you heard it said as we, that the grant us the serenity? Let's try saying it that way. Mm. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back. It works if you work it, and you're worth it. All right, awesome. Yay. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you
very much.
Yay. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to give this back to you.
Oh, I keep forgetting.